normal or not.
Okay, give me a
Like
second.
your image is fuzzy, but I can hear you fine.
Okay, it should clear up. Just give it a couple minutes.
Jeff, how's my audio? I'm using this new mic, so I'm not sure how it is yet.
Sounds great.
Sick. Cool.
You fancy, you got a new mic?
Yeah, it was a gift, so
Okay.
might as well use it.
Sweet man. Well, yeah, we'll just get rolling. Appreciate you hopping on here. Obviously we've had the privilege of talking more and more often lately. But I realized, outside of you being my coach and kind of offering me guidance in my racing career, there's a lot I don't know about you. And yeah, I'd love to just hop into your story and get to know a little bit more about the true Rylan.
Okay, sweet man. I'm looking forward to it.
So I guess just for background, for people that have been living under a rock, maybe don't follow the racing space or the hybrid space as much, kind of give them like a little background about what it is you compete in and what your background was prior to OCR and hybrid racing.
Yeah, so right now, I'm one of the, I think the only like male athlete right now that I know of that's trying to do like Hyrox, Decafit, OCR racing, like Spartan, and also the OCR World Championships, and then also like sky running as well, and some mountain bike racing here and there. So I'm trying to balance a few things. I might try an Xterra at some point. I got to work on my swimming a bit more, but. Yeah, I love all things racing. So really I try and do as much as I can. But my big goal is I want to keep building a large aerobic engine so that I can handle multiple types of racing. That way I can pick, maybe I do a 2 or 3 month block before a specific event, but because I have a broad base to pull from, I can kind of specialize in different areas depending on what I need to. So that's how I approach like my racing career, and I've been having some recent success in Hyrox and Decafit, and then also some in OCR as well. So yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah, so how did this all start? Were you kind of always an athlete from a young age?
Yes, so my family was a bit strange to most people growing up. My mom and dad were big on very, very big on aerobic activity. So for instance, like my parents had a rule from the time we were like 4 or 5 years old that we had to do at least 30 minutes to an hour of exercise a day, if we weren't going to a soccer practice or baseball or basketball, whatever we were playing at the time. My mom would literally like come upstairs to my room. She's like, have you worked out today? And those are some of my earliest memories are like my mom taking us on a run or, going to play soccer with us. If we ever weren't in a team sport, it wasn't an option to just chillax unless it was Sunday. If it was Sunday, we were allowed to chill, but every other day it was like you're at least gonna go do 30 minutes to an hour. 'Cause if we didn't, we would just be bouncing off the walls. So my mom was like, I can't handle five boys like this. You guys have to go outside and like go work out. And then when we would get in trouble, the worst punishment she would make us do is she would take, like, I remember in middle school doing this one. She would take the bar, we had like a home gym with a barbell, and she would make us bench press just the barbell to failure. So we're talking like 100 reps of just up, down. And we would try and fake that we were gassed out and couldn't do anymore. And she'd just look at us and be like, no, you're not done. You have more reps than you. And we just have to go until failure. It was or she would make us run 3 miles, one or the other. So yeah,
Dude, that's
interesting,
hardcore.
interesting stories for sure.
How, I'm curious, because I feel like, I don't know, personally, I feel like we could probably use a little bit more of that now because the pendulum has swung so far into the other direction in terms of sedentary youth. But how did it turn out? Like, if you guys are five research projects, like, what was your mom's results? Like, are you guys all still active? Did some of your brothers kind of rebel and want to do the opposite of movement, or how did it turn out?
No, actually all of my brothers are still extremely active. One of them is like a cowboy and he does mountain guiding as well. So he's still super active, just in a different way. He doesn't go to the gym because he's outside all the time, which is perfectly healthy. I actually think it's more healthy than being inside in a gym in a lot of ways. And then the rest of us, like I have an older brother who he really got into CrossFit for a while. I have a younger brother that he does kind of a mix of everything, but a lot of calisthenics. And then another younger brother who does a lot of similar things as me. He likes to run. He's training for a 50 miler right now, his first ultra.
Sick.
And he coaches as at a gymnastics gym and a ninja gym. And he's like, he, and he's a super strong climber. So yeah, we all, even my sister, like we all ended up loving fitness. And I think the difference was, like, yes, it was a punishment for us boys at points, but it was always explained to us. Like, my mom would always sit us down and be like, hey, the reason I'm making you do this is because you're angry right now and you need to learn how to release your anger in a healthy way. So she's like, I'm gonna make you go run. And then we would go run. And then we'd come back and she'd be like, did that make you feel better? And we would either have to say yes or no. And lots of the time, you know, we're mad, so we'd say no, but inside, like, we're like, yeah, I feel better.
You don't want to give her like the credit of knowing what you needed, but at the same time, you're like, yeah, I feel better.
Yeah, I feel better. So it was actually a really healthy way, I think, because of, like, for instance, I mean, with disciplining children, if you do it in a way where you're angry at them and you feel like, and you're a parent and the child feels like you're just doing it to get back at them, then it's different than them, than like the parent being very calm and loving and being like, hey, that's not okay. That's not how we behave. Therefore, you're going to do this, not because I'm angry at you, but because I want to make you a better person. And I think that was the real difference of years and years of consistency of that. I was blessed with amazing parents and, like, they were made fun of a lot for the types of discipline that they would give us. But now, like, I have the coolest family I've ever met, man. It's amazing.
That's super special. And I think one thing that comes to my mind is she must have been a pretty like baller athlete herself. Like if she was making you do all this stuff, I can't imagine that she wasn't practicing what she was preaching.
Yeah, so that was the other thing. My dad, he was more of a team sports guy. So he liked to go play basketball. So that was another thing is my dad would take us to one of my earliest childhood memories is I grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska for the first 7 years of my life. And in the summer, they had the Lincoln, the Capital Mile, where you would run two laps around the Capitol and it was like a mile race. And one of my earliest memories as a kid was going and getting running shoes because getting new shoes in a family that big was a huge deal. And so going and getting running shoes with my brothers and training for that with my dad and then running it with my dad. And I think I was 5 at the time, and it's one of my earliest memories. That and my dad teaching me how to ride a bike. And then all the parks that my mom would take us to when we were super young, like every single day we'd be out there on our bikes or we'd scooter to the park or we'd run and we'd get a play on the playground and then we'd run home. And she just made it fun. Like they both did it. And my mom was always like training for marathons or she always has a fitness goal. Like her health has taken her a lot of different places, but no matter what, she's always had a goal. Like I've never known my mom without a fitness goal. It's crazy.
It's so important too. And I think folks that maybe haven't had like a race to look forward to, they might not understand what that does to your brain. But just that thing out in the future that enacts a little bit more urgency in your training is so important. Even if you're a fit person and you've been fit your whole life, just putting something on the calendar will give you like this extra level and this extra level of discipline that you didn't have before.
Yeah, I'm still that way. I think maybe that's what I learned from my mom, or maybe it's just who I am now. But like, for instance, I have two really big races coming up in about 2.5 to 3.5 weeks. I have Decafit World Championships, and I'm racing four races that weekend. And then the following weekend, I have Spartan World Championships in Abu Dhabi. But I already know what's next on the calendar for me for the next year. And I already have ideas in my head of like, okay, if I tweak my fitness this way and I start doing this immediately after World Champs, I'll take a small deload and kind of take an off season. I'm headed to Nigeria to work with back-to-back missions, which I'm really excited about for my off season. And then I'll come back and get straight back to work on a different goal. And it's such an exciting thing when you, like, it doesn't have to be the next weekend. It can be 2, 5. Honestly, it's even better if it's like a year in advance. I even have a 10-year goal of trying to race Red Bull X Alps, which is like a paragliding race where you run up the mountain and then you paraglide as far as you can. And then you run up the next peak and paraglide until you drop out all the way across the Alps. And like, that's my 10-year goal. So it's 100%. When you have those goals in mind, it helps so much with like the drive to continue being a healthy person.
So tell me about this paragliding thing, because I think, you know, part of the reason I think you and I see eye to eye is because fitness in many ways is a way to get into adventure, and adventure is one of those ways to utilize your fitness. And it's kind of a balance between those two. And one of the most adventurous things I've seen you do is this crazy ass paragliding thing where you're running up mountains and then just sending it kind of solo on a paraglider. How did you get into that?
So I've wanted to be three things ever since I was a little kid. And one was a firefighter, one was a professional athlete, and one was a pilot. And I was a cyclist before I got into the hybrid racing scene at a professional level. And the scene is still growing, so it's still hard to make like a full-time living off of just hybrid racing. There's a couple people that do it, but it's very difficult. But the sport's growing, it might happen in the future. But before that, I was a cyclist, and then I became a firefighter. And as soon as I became a firefighter, I was starting to look at like, okay, how do I become a pilot? And the most inexpensive way that looked interesting to me was these small versions of a paraglider, where like a paraglider is usually quite large, but they have these smaller versions called speed wings. And it's so fast. Like you can, I'm ready to downsize and get a faster one. I just keep telling myself I'll buy it later, 'cause I don't like buying new things. But it basically a speed wing is, it's a lot more controllable than a skydiving chute. And also it has a lot more glide. So you can hike to the top of a cliff, a mountain, and then you forecast to make sure the weather's good, the wind's the right direction as much as possible. So I have like 12 different weather apps on my phone. And then I look at all my favorites. And then I go up to a peak that I think is going to send. And I'll kind of sit there for a little bit, evaluate the wind condition, look at the clouds, the weather, and then I'll just run off. And it's one of my favorite things to do. And also, it's great fitness, man. Like you have some weight on your back. You can, like, I can do anywhere from like a pretty easy zone 2 effort all the way up to threshold intervals. Like I've done 3x10, basically with my backpack on. I'll on the trail. Yeah. Up. I'll do 3x10. And then if you're trying to avoid impact, it's also, unless you crash, it's a very low impact sport. 'Cause on the way down, you're not running down, so you don't have all the impact from like landing and having the extra gravity of the downward force. And so it's a good way for me to build fitness without the impact of running.
I like that emphasis on impact of running. Hopefully you never have the other kind of impact.
I haven't crashed in a bad, terrible way, but there's definitely some landings that have been smoother than others. And the more I practice, the better I get. But then I was gone for 5 weeks and I just flew last night and my landing was not as smooth and graceful as it could have been. And I was like, man, I'm rusty again. Like I got to nail this. And it's an ongoing process. You never finish learning.
The first time I heard about the speed flying was I saw this guy, I think his name's Jamie Lee. His Instagram is Jamie Lee Speed. Flyer, dude, his videos are wild. And I DM'd him. He's a super nice guy, by the way. And I just was like, yo, this looks like something that I would let consume my life. And I was like asking him, you know, what it takes to get into it, like how long it took him to progress to that level. Cause he's doing flips, he's dropping down, he's skimming his feet through canyons, like doing all this crazy stuff. And the speeds are unimaginable.
Yep.
So it's,
yeah, I'm still trying to progress to that point, but I watch his videos all the time, especially the one from New Zealand. Yeah. Such rad videos, dude. I'm trying to get like my camera mounted up behind me on a backpack, but I don't know how they set it up, but I got a new camera to be able to do that, but I'm trying to figure out how to mount it. Cause I tried and then the pole broke. Cause I went into a spiral and then the G-force like snapped the pole that was on my back. So then my camera almost fell out. So I was like flying and trying not to lose my camera at the same time. It was not a great experience. So I'm trying to figure it out.
It's kind of terrifying. I feel like he definitely knows. He's probably got a trick because he whips that thing around so fast that he's probably got like some super stable camera setup.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I'll send him a DM and ask him. I've never like interacted with him on Instagram, but he's got some cool stuff.
Yeah. Shout out to that guy. Jamie Lee Speed Flyer.
Yeah.
That guy's sick. So before you get into all the OCR stuff, you were saying, that you were on the professional circuit, mountain biking. Tell me a little bit about how that started, because I feel like most kids grow up, go to high school, maybe they're into team sports or into fishing. I don't really hear a lot of kids like, I want to be a professional mountain bike racer. So how did you get onto that track?
So I grew up playing soccer for about 12 years straight. Like I was the soccer kid. I wanted to play professional soccer for a while. And then honestly, I don't think I really had the amount of talent. Like I tried to get into the Olympic development program and just was kind of always like right on the cusp of either like the first team, and it was super expensive. And then the next step after that is like the national team. And like, that wasn't even on my radar. Like I never made it to that. And I had friends, I had a couple teammates who made it on, which is they're playing professionally now, which is cool. But then I was like, okay, I'll try and play D1 in college. So I started the college process. But then when I was around 14, I bought my first mountain bike off Bikes Direct, like a cheapo Chinese one, because I didn't realize what I was doing. And I started riding and loved it because my little brother started riding and I'd see him going off jumps and I was like, that looks cool. I want to try it. And the first ride, I ate it, and it was in the fall. Like I went off a switchback and rolled down the mountain. And so I didn't bike again for like 9 months in the mountains. I was too scared because it was, now looking back, it's one of the most technical trails in Logan that I could have tried, but it was the first one I did. And I didn't know. I didn't know they made trails for mountain biking because like my family wasn't into it. And so the next summer I started going with some buddies and they took me on way easier trails. And I was like, oh, this is way fun. So then I found out there was a mountain biking team, but I was still playing soccer. So I would occasionally show up to the practices, and one of the coaches, we were doing intervals at the mountain bike practice. And one of the coaches was like, hey, you need to race, dude. Like, let's get you a bike. And let's race. And I had started working at a bike shop. So I had access to some things on discount. And then he sold me like a bunch of his old parts because he used to be a professional rider. I show up to my first race and I loved it, dude. Like I went from the back of the pack of about 100 kids all the way up to fourth, and just like chasing down that many kids was so much fun. And I was burnt out on soccer because of all the politics and you have to rely on teammates and everything. And so I get done and I was known as the soccer kid, and my mom comes up and she's like, seems like you really loved that. I said, I loved that. She said, more than soccer? And I kind of just sat there and I said, about the same. But inside I knew, I was like, this is way more fun. So that was my junior year of high school. So I didn't find it till I was 16. And I decided the following year not to play senior year of soccer. And I stopped talking to colleges. I didn't even try and apply to any of their programs anymore. And I went all in on mountain biking because I wanted to make the junior national team for the mountain bike team, which within a year of starting racing is maybe not the most realistic thing, but I almost did it. I was like one spot away. Like I went all in, like that is where, because I was always interested in exercise science and nutrition all throughout high school. But it really accelerated as soon as I decided, because I literally had the mindset when I was 15, 16 years old, like if I train smarter than everybody, train harder and eat better and recover better, then maybe I can make it happen in a year. And so I spent so much time like on like medical journals and on like just random YouTube cycling people, just trying to learn everything. And then also I was very fortunate to have that ex-professional cyclist. He was a coach in Logan, Utah, where I grew up. And he was also a PT, and he was super passionate about exercise science as well. So I'd go over to his house and just ask him questions, and it was fun, man. Like big learning experience, like acceleration is how I would describe it. It's like I just went all in on it for a few years. And so then when I was 18, I got my pro card and started racing on like the Pro XCT circuit. I got a few UCI points, which is like the world ranking points. And then I actually stopped because I was constantly trying to get lighter. So I was about the same height that I am now. But I was 155. And I was kept trying to get lighter and lighter. And eventually like my hormones got all out of whack. I ended up with a pretty solid binge eating disorder that took me a couple years to get to recover from. And so I had to let go of cycling to because I tried to make it work for about a year with the eating disorder, and it just took all the fun out of it for me. So I just stepped back and took a break, which now I'm super thankful for sure.
Yeah, I think that's something that a lot of people, maybe if they're not in individual sports, probably don't understand, but it all comes down to this power versus weight ratio, whether it's in biking or climbing. And like the stigma around eating disorders, I think most people think about young women, but they don't think about male athletes and how it affects a man trying to become the most efficient athlete possible.
Yeah, especially when you're going all in on it because you want to make your life like you're living doing it. It's super tempting for young males to be like, I gotta make this work. I gotta get lighter. And so, I tracked calories for a couple years and was always trying to be in a deficit, and eventually got to the point where I was like so lean for my body type that like I was really small. My legs are about the same size. I still wear the same jeans. It was all like I put on about 30, 25 pounds of upper body mass. The legs are about the same size. It's crazy.
So I feel like that's typically like the biker build too, just like a really small upper body frame. Was it mostly just eating, or were you doing like a lot of excessive training to also kind of fall into that deficit?
So I remember my recovery days, kind of trying to extend them, and it's really stupid now that I look back at it, but I remember trying to keep my heart rate at a specific zone. Even on zone one days, I would try and keep it on my like upper zone one because I knew I would burn more calories, and I wouldn't eat before so that I could eat more after. And the only thing that I could think about for that last year of my cycling career was food. That was all I could think about. Like, what's the next meal? How long do I have to wait? What am I gonna eat? Can I include like spaghetti squash or cucumbers or celery or cauliflower rice to increase the volume to make my stomach feel full without the calories? So like every time I had oatmeal, I would throw like half a cup of cauliflower rice in there just to make it more. And oats don't even have that many calories, man. It's like 300 calories for a cup of oats. And yeah, like it was, now I look back at it, I'm like, I learned a ton about nutrition because I cared about it so much because I wanted to lose weight. So I tried to figure out every way that I could essentially perform while being in a caloric deficit. So like nutrient timing, caloric timing, so that I could still hopefully perform in a workout well. So I actually still raced well because I was very educated on, okay, even if I'm in a deficit, I can eat at this time and then I'll have this many hours to like have glucose in my muscles, and then I'll eat during the workout and then immediately after, and then I'll kind of starve myself for a long time and then try and like, and then I'll have my recovery day, which it doesn't really matter if I'm depleted on that day, and then just like constant cycle. Which it worked until I was just like wasted, man.
Do you feel like, you know, did you have your hand to the pulse of the rest of the racers? Were they also going through a similar cost benefit in their head?
Yeah, so that's where I don't think I really realized how excessive I was getting, because it was a really normal thing for at like team training camps. We'd be rolling in and one of the first questions that we'd ask each other is like, how much do you weigh right now? And then everybody would be saying like, oh, you know, I'm 165 right now, but goal weight to 150. And that's normal, dude. That is so normal. And kids would do it. Like I remember, there's one kid, I don't want to name him, but I remember he would roll into the season at like 160, 165. And then by the end of the season, he would try and time it so that during his best races, he was at like 143, which is a huge percentage. I didn't fluctuate usually that much. Usually I would come into the season at, I would try and stay around 170. Because that's the thing with endurance sports that's really common is when you're out of season, you try and like increase body fat so you don't get sick all the time. And then you try and time it so that you're depleting, and then you kind of have a small spike in calories before your event, so you're like, you actually feel strong, and then you tank again.
Yeah.
And so that way it's like a yo-yo, and that's totally normal in cycling. Like everyone has their off season weight and then they have their on season weight.
Yeah. I think of it similar to martial arts too, or fighting or wrestling, right? All those guys are cutting, you know, some of them 20 pounds in a day, just completely dehydrating themselves, all the brain fog that comes with it. They take that in stride because they know they're going to build back up and have a little bit of wiggle room right before the race to build those calories back up, get to normal, and then hopefully perform on that day. But it's such a crazy cycle, and it's a testament to, you know, how bad people do want this. It's like they're willing to do whatever it takes. And sometimes it might be willing to do a little bit too much.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing is, I think there's a healthy way to be a lean endurance athlete, but also body types factors in. And I actually, after trying for a few years, like now I look back at it and I think if I would have just accepted that maybe I should just hang around 160 instead of 155, I really think I would have enjoyed cycling more. And I also think that my body would have gotten stronger, because that's the other thing that people don't talk about is I stopped when I was about 20 to 21 with my professional career, because I was so burnt out and I couldn't handle the eating portion, the food portion anymore. And you can only increase in fitness so fast. And so now I actually have like a pretty similar FTP, like power to weight ratio than I did back then. It's slightly lower, but I honestly think if I would have just stuck with it and been okay with being a little bit heavier and focused on building power instead of dropping weight, I 100% think that like a lot of the buddies that I used to race and beat, like they're the top guys in the US now, or some of the top guys, and they put in a ton of work to get there. And so mad respect to them, but they've also been consistent. Like it didn't happen for them overnight. It literally took them until the last couple years, you know, like I've switched gears and I've gone more the hybrid athlete route. But some of my old friends or old teammates, like they're literally getting on the podium at national championships and like racing all around the world and making good money doing it. and I'm stoked for them because they kept it consistent, but they also focused on the long game of, okay, maybe I'm not gonna be a pro athlete this year, like fully funded, but 5 years from now, maybe. And yeah, and they are. It's cool.
Yeah, it's that long-term mindset, right? Like, and I can totally see myself being in your position, like 18 years old. I want to be pro now. I want to be the best now. I need it all now, now, now. And you don't really have that long frame of mind. And I think that just comes with years. And after making, you know, you go through life and you make mistakes and you learn that you got to have a longer time horizon if you really want to be good at something, whether it's sports or business or a relationship. It's always better to think about like long-term growth.
Yeah. I was just talking two nights ago with one of my athletes and they've got some health things going on that's not really their fault. Like it's kind of similar to me earlier this year where like sometimes you know, maybe you have a cut on the bottom of your foot and it gets infected. That's what happened to me, and you have to get it cauterized a few times. Like stuff like that happens. And what I think the cool part about injuries or things that you can't really control very well after they've happened is it forces you to realize like either I'm going to be so frustrated about what I can't do now, or I focus on what I can do, which will hopefully set me up for the future. And so if I play the long game, like that's why I try not to think about too much about this year. Like obviously I'm training for events this year, but I'm also thinking about, okay, next year and the year after that, how am I building my fitness over the long term so that it sets me up for my goals 3 years from now as well?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I'm this year doesn't go well. It's like, okay, I've got next year.
Yeah. I mean, that was part of why I reached out to you in the first place as like, as a coach, is because I have often thought about things like one race at a time and been like so focused on developing a specific type of fitness for a specific race. I think because I got into running later, I pushed myself super hard so that I could be at a high level right away. Cause I didn't want to suck. that's as simple as it is. Like, but now that I've been running for a couple of years now, I can see like, you're not going to develop speed in a year. Like you can develop some speed in a year, definitely, but you're not going to develop like world-class speed in 12 months. It takes a couple years to build. There's going to be injuries in there. There's going to be life events. There's going to be breakups or, you know, family deaths that take you off your rocker. There's going to be life that happens, and you just have to like stay super consistent if you actually want to build to being the best athlete.
Yeah. And that's where I think learning to use fitness as a coping mechanism is really helpful, because then when those life events do happen, like that was honestly why from March until August, September was one of the most difficult time periods of my life for me this year, because I use exercise as a way to cope with things that happen in life. And there was a lot that happened outside of injuries and outside of sport, but when I was dealing with the foot problem, and then because of it, I was like numbing it with lidocaine so I could still run, because the doctor said I could still run and it wouldn't make it worse, which it did actually. But I was numbing it with lidocaine, but I was still running funny because it hurt so bad. And then I gave myself Achilles tendonitis on the other side. And then I crashed on my bike and thought I broke my hand for a bit, so I couldn't climb and I couldn't ride. So I was just laying in bed. I woke up the next morning and I was just like, I don't know what to do anymore. Like I can't grab anything with my hand. I can't ride my bike and I can't run. Like I don't know what to do anymore. And I think that's where it can get really difficult. But with like, you know, with when at different points in my life, like fitness is one of the most useful things for me to move past difficult situations.
Yeah, it is tough because you can get in that spot where you become so reliant on fitness. I'm sure it's just like people who are on drugs. Like if you're on a drug and you're used to like going to this drug and then you're out of the drug, you're like, what do I do now? That's kind of how I feel about like training. If I'm like training really hard, training all the time to get through my problems, training when I'm happy, training when I'm sad, and then I can't train, I'm like, you know, scratch my arm. Like, what am I supposed to do? I can't train.
Yeah. It's a very real thing that I don't think we really talk about very much. And it's like athletes that deal with depression through injury or some form of like a shorter term depression when they can't train how they want. It's a very real thing for a lot of people. I know it is for me, at least.
No, I've had that. And I mean, the people around me, like, they even notice, like, if I can't train, like, I'm just not as happy of a person. But I've figured out a way through most injuries, and I'm sure you have too. Like, I still usually find a way. Like, for example, when I got frostbite and like neurosis in both feet, I couldn't even walk. I definitely couldn't run, but I could assault bike. And that's when I just literally, I would sit on the assault bike 4 hours a day and just pedal. And then that's when I did the world record, because I was like, I'm just going to spend all my time on a stationary bike, because if not, I'll probably go crazy.
Which it's the mindset shift for me is sometimes difficult, because I have this specific goal in my head or this specific target event. And if I know I'm not doing the perfect prep for that, it takes like a revamping of my mindset of, okay, don't focus on what you can't do, focus on what you can do, and I'll feel better about it. Like, even if, like, if I can't grab things with one hand because I crashed on my mountain bike or whatever, well, I can probably still sit on the assault bike and just pedal my feet, you know? Or that's actually why I started swimming, because swimming didn't hurt my hand and it didn't hurt like running did. And I had to take a small break, a couple week break from the bike. And so I started swimming, even though I hate swimming, but I had to change my attitude on swimming and be like, it's better than nothing. Like, it's so much better than nothing. And I feel better.
I'm curious on this, especially with literally your last month, which was, I think by anybody's standards, just like absolutely crazy, just traveling all over Europe and racing everywhere, coming into the biggest Hyrox race of the year, in Chicago, did you have some of that anxiety? Well, I guess maybe for people that don't know, tell me about like kind of how that last European trip worked out and what it consisted of. And then my question is, did you have anxiety that you were kind of overtrained or underrested coming into Hyrox Chicago?
100%. I started getting like the eye twitching, which usually for me is a sign that my CNS is pretty upset. Like, my nervous system is definitely taking a lot of load. So I started to feel that at Trifecta Worlds the week before. And that was about 28 miles of racing 3 days in a row. And it was all pretty high intensity. Like, most of the time when I looked down at my watch on anything flat, we were at 5:30 to 6 minute pace. And then on the climbs, obviously slower, and the descents sometimes faster. And then you have the obstacles between, which they had quite a few carries. It was fun. I love that event. It's very diverse. Very flat for me, but still very diverse and fun. So, so the trip, it kind of actually started about 6 weeks ago now, I think, 6 or 7. Cause I did OCRWC 3K on Friday, and then I flew overnight to Alpha Warrior on Saturday. And then I flew down to Mexico for the 3K and raced the 3K, and then tried to race the Beast. But at about mile 8, I pulled out because I could feel like my soft tissue, because I wasn't running very many miles. So the Beast was too much at that point. But I was trying to see if it made sense to go to Trifecta World still, because I knew it would be even more miles. So pulled out of that one. Then I came home, and my brother just had a baby. So I went and visited my niece in Wyoming that week. Came back, slept in my bed 2 nights, and then went to, I like to do long layovers, because if I fly all the way to Europe, I like to experience as much as I can. So I found some 24-hour layovers in Switzerland and in Turkey. So I flew to Switzerland, spent 24 hours there, went on a big city bike ride, which was perfect to spin out. Like, in my mind, it's perfect because you basically split the flights in half. And you get in a lot of aerobic work that's easy on a city bike or something like that. Maybe you go to a gym and hop on the spin bike or the ergs. I'd rather go outside and see the country. And so I did like 25 miles on the city bike, just like 24-inch wheels, little basket on the front, just this American just cranking it out in Switzerland. It was so much fun. And then I went back to the airport, flew to Valencia in Spain, raced the High Rocks there. Massive shout out to John Wynn. He helped me like basically prepare for that race and get in. So that was awesome. And then honestly, there's the High Rocks community is really cool, where they're very inclusive, and they, I guess the OCR community is too. Like, people are willing to help you figure it out and give you tips and stuff. So yeah, showed up. That was a 5 p.m. race, which worked better for me since they're technically ahead. Mm-hmm. So it was 5 p.m. there, but it was really more like in the morning back in the States. So I didn't really have to adjust. I just tried to sleep longer. Or sleep in the morning, I should say. And then race Saturday, I stayed there and did some extra workouts because I knew I needed to do some heavier stuff before High Rock Chicago, but I was racing Trifecta Worlds the next weekend. So I did heavy stuff on Monday, Tuesday, and some speed work. And then I rested Wednesday, Thursday, raced on Friday, in Greece. And then Saturday and Sunday as well. And then flew back on Monday, did another 24 hours in Switzerland. And also I stopped in Turkey for a while, just to check out Istanbul. Top tip, guys, if you fly with Turkish Airlines, you get a free tour of the city if you have a long layover in Turkey. So if you're ever in Istanbul or you're going through it, book with Turkish Airlines. They give you a free tour of the city. They'll take you to get coffee and stuff. It's cool.
That's great. Anyways,
Yeah, it's sweet. I actually slept on the ground there, though, because there's a fiasco in the airport where, like, right when I got off the plane, they said you either have to go, like, through customs and go to the city, or you go to the international terminal for your next flight. Well, the sleep pods I was going to sleep in were in the international terminal, but they made me go off through customs. So then I would have had to go all the way back out, sleep, and then all the way back through customs. And so I just decided to sleep in the grass because I only had a few hours.
Probably got amazing red blood cell benefits, though, because sleeping on the ground improves circulation like crazy.
Yeah, maybe that's why Trifecta Worlds went so well. Yeah.
Just, man.
Who knows? I don't know how much sleeping I did, but I probably got 2 hours.
You laid there.
Yeah, I laid there for a while. I could feel the blood cells, you know. So, yeah, it was like... so then I came back, and in Chicago, I could feel my body was really having a really hard time recovering from Trifecta Worlds. So the way I thought about it is basically I got 3 quality workouts in 3 days in a row at Trifecta Worlds. So on, Monday, I took it pretty chill. Tuesday morning before I flew back to Chicago while I was in Switzerland, I did some spicy work just to keep my body from basically completely resting. Cause I found when I completely rest the whole week leading up to an event, I kind of shut down.
Yeah.
So I did like some 200 meter repeats on the trails there. And then Wednesday, Thursday, super chill. Friday, a couple openers. And then Saturday, I raced Chicago. And I was honestly just praying. I was like, God, just give me one more race. Like, I promise I'll go home and rest after this. Like, I know I'm asking for a lot, because I didn't feel the best leading up to it. But sure enough, on Saturday, I woke up, felt fine, sent it, felt good.
So. Yeah, and I mean, anybody who watched that race, first of all, I'd like to just say, High Rocks, their elevation of their live broadcast is just going like this versus like so many other, I don't know, hybrid space. Like, sometimes you get a good broadcast, sometimes it's terrible, sometimes it's non-existent. Like, High Rocks, literally every broadcast I watch gets better and better. And that broadcast was easy to watch. It was clear to see who was there. The announcers did a great job. And so we were watching, and I mean, I know all you guys, right? So I know who's fit. I know who, you know, should, like, from an odds perspective, be towards the top. And I knew you were one of, if not the fittest guys there, but I also knew you were the most overtrained guy there, or at least over-raced. I guess I shouldn't say overtrained. I should say over-raced. And so I was wondering, I'm like, there's a chance that his body just decided the day before that he's too tired and he's just going to have to try and hold on, and you weren't holding on. You were on Kent's heels the entire time. Like, until the last minute, I wasn't sure who was going to win. It was one of those high rocks races that you actually still don't know who's going to win at wall balls. Usually the race is over by then, but this race, I was like, this could go either way. So it was exciting, and I was very, very impressed.
Thanks, man. I actually thought, when I kind of structured this block, I realized Trifecta Worlds, if I played it right and could recover enough, it would be a really good block, because when you run 28 miles, you can't do it all at threshold. So right. It was a lot of sub-threshold running at sea level, and I usually don't get to run at sea level. So Valencia and being in Greece at a pretty low elevation actually helped me tap into the paces that I could handle at sea level. Because that's something, like, people always focus on, oh, I got to train at altitude. Oh, I got to do altitude, altitude, altitude. It's like such an advantage. But what they don't study and realize is there's also another effect where if you come from altitude and you go down to sea level, yes, you run faster, but your body also doesn't really realize and know how to use the muscle that it can utilize. Like, it doesn't learn that for a bit. So I actually thought it would help in Chicago as long as I could recover enough. So I had a good race, and honestly, I'm very grateful that I could, because I was definitely on the fence, and I'm paying the repercussions now. I'm not gonna lie. Like, the last couple of days, I've tried to run fast a bit, and it's kind of like 90-95% at best. So.
Yeah, but I think 90-95% is pretty great for where you were at, and, you know, what could be happening. I think you make a great point, which is there is always a adjustment period when you're going to altitude, right? Even if you live there, when you come back, you still need a couple days to, like, fire on all cylinders. I think the same can be said. And I always like to put in little fast bursts when I get down to sea level so that I can get that turnover going and get that high cadence running in. Because if not, sure, I'm going to have more like aerobic capacity in my lungs, but my legs won't be used to running that fast.
Yeah, your muscular loading, like, you technically, because you're able to run faster, you're able to utilize more muscle, but that muscle that can recover quicker because it's getting more oxygen, it's not used to doing that much work. So I think that's honestly another reason that a lot of people cramp, because I, at least in the cramping camp, there's a lot of people who think it's completely electrolytes. I think it's actually your muscle. It's a mix of your electrolyte and pH balance and your muscle not being used to that level of effort. Because that's usually when cramping happens, is in a race where you're asking more than you did in training for, like, a specific event. So I think that's a big reason why when people go down in altitude and they also race, lots of the time they have a hard time with cramping, especially if it's hot. So if you mix all of those, it's a good way to cramp.
Yeah. How do you see yourself moving forward in terms of, like, the split between OCR and high rocks? It seems like for me, or from a lot of the people I know, Spartan particularly and some of these other obstacle course racing brands are losing less appeal with the elite athletes, and it feels like hybrid racing like high rocks is gaining more appeal. Is that how you see it, or do you have kind of a different split in mind?
I would definitely agree with that across the board. I think I'm slightly different right now, where I'm actually having a hard time. I sent High Rocks an email recently. I'm not sure if they'll get back to me, but I read the rule book for High Rocks because at OCRWC in 2022, I got DQ'd because I used chalk and didn't realize that it was illegal at that specific race, because Spartan allows it. They allow liquid and liquid chalk, from what I understand. I think that rule still stands in Spartan. Check your own rule book. But yeah, so I read High Rocks because people are always talking about the burpee broad jumps and everything that's legal. So I went and read the rules because I wanted to make sure I was at the standard. And I also worked on my wall balls to make sure they were getting low enough and stuff like that. And when I was reading through, I realized there was nothing about performance enhancing drugs on it. And so it's legal. And my conscience has a hard time promoting a sport that doesn't want to be clean. So basically I view it as they're a new enough sport. So it could be that they just can't address it yet, or they haven't addressed it yet. And I'm actually not calling for drug testing. I want to see if they want to make it illegal or not by writing it in the rules.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'll keep racing Hyrox, cause I don't know if it's going to be a brand that I'm going to support in the future. As of right now, I'm happy to. But if they like now, I definitely know it's been brought to their attention. And if they decide to, you know, allow people to do whatever, like I want to help direct other kids that are younger than me. I want to help direct them into sports that are clean and not as dangerous. And so if with how much Hyrox is growing and the prize money is going up and the notoriety is definitely going up, like the status that you can get, I don't think people realize that it's not always about the money. There's a lot of people that would dope in cycling just for the national championship jersey in the age group category. Mm-hmm. And there's like safer drugs and more dangerous ones. And like blood doping usually is not as safe as other versions, but it worries me if they decide not to take a stance on it, that technically just means it's legal. And then I don't want to promote that to other people. So I might not race it. So honestly, if I go the Hyrox route or more Decafit or more a mix of everything, it kind of depends on what Hyrox decides to do. Cause I also have a large interest in sky running. So I'm actually trying to, and I love OCR as well. So I'm actually trying to build back my running mileage slowly, so that I can handle longer races in the mountains.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, I know that you and I have talked about this before, which is, the steroid and performance enhancing drug issue in Hyrox and how it's simply not mentioned in the rule books. It's just omitted. It's not saying you should or shouldn't. It just doesn't say anything. Yeah. And the issue is they can't say PEDs are not allowed in Hyrox. And the reason is because they're saying it's a race for everyone. And at this point, there's a massive percentage of males over the age of 40 who are on TRT. And so the whole saying of like, none of you guys are allowed to do Hyrox isn't sustainable. But what I think they can do is say, if you're going to race in the Elite 15, which is where the prize money is, you have to get drug tested, or at very minimum, write in the Elite 15 PEDs are illegal. Yep. I still think if you're only testing 15 people, that there's no like cost excuse, right? Because that's a lot of people's excuse. It's like, oh, well then that cost is going to get passed on to the people buying tickets. And it's like, no, it's 15 drug tests. It's like, you can buy them at CVS. They're not that expensive. 15 people is 15 people.
Or you don't even have to do all 15. Like yeah. I brought up how, so I have a buddy that is a, like an Olympic level track cyclist. And basically he just has to, whenever he's on, basically like wherever he is, he has to let this testing brand is how I describe it. Basically USA Cycling. He has to let them know where he's residing at any given point. So if he's at a training camp, he has to say, hey, I'm going to be in California for 2 weeks, or Colorado, or, you know, wherever Mexico, wherever the training camp is. So basically you kind of allow them to keep tabs on you, and then they're allowed to show up at any given point and take a drug test. And that, yeah. I think that actually would freak people out more and keep them from using, because it could happen at any given time. So they don't have a chance to cycle off. Like they literally just text you an hour before. And then the way it works with them is, obviously like some people can't make it work on an hour's notice. So they'll literally just like wait at your work until you're done. Like you can, basically when you leave, they take your blood or whatever, or they have yeah. your pee up or both. And then if you say no, you get three no's before they just drop you. Cause then they're like, okay, something's funny. But like, say you can't make it work cause you know, you had a family emergency or something, and you're like, no, I have to go home right now. You can do that three times before they're like, all right, something's fishy. But that keeps it so random that even if you only did that a couple times a year to random Elite 15 athletes, or anyone racing in the pro category, maybe would be a better principle, because there's people trying to get to the Elite 15 in there. That way it's just kind of a scary thing of like, oh, what if I'm the next random, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. I think something is bound to happen in the Elite 15 space, because if not, you're going to run into that cycling thing where it's a disadvantage not to take PEDs. Like right now, if you were a smart racer and you didn't have any, like moral obligations, you would just take PEDs and you wouldn't be doing anything wrong.
And that's my issue, is it's not even in the rule book. So I'm actually not even saying they need to start testing for me to keep racing. Yeah. I'm just saying, I don't know if I can agree with just the ignoring it anymore.
Sure.
So I think at least, I don't know what my timeline is, but I feel like, you know, around the world champs, I'll decide. So we'll see.
Yeah. And I mean, I've told you this in private, but I think people are on PEDs. I don't know who is and who isn't, but I think, in my opinion, I think it'd be ignorant to think no one is. I mean, okay, so we see the top 15 guys. There's another 200 guys that are on the cusp, right? This is a sport of seconds. And to say none of those top 200 guys are doing anything to give themselves an edge, it seems unrealistic to me. I personally think there's people that are using PEDs right now, and they're not breaking any rules.
Yeah, they're not breaking rules, so there's nothing wrong with it. And that's my issue. It's like, I don't want to promote a sport that's like that. So that's why I'm not really sure. I don't know how to answer that question.
Yeah, it's a tough spot. I don't know. I haven't fully developed how I feel about it either, but it is something I think these conversations are good to have, because I think people need to start thinking about this and thinking about where they stand on the issue. I'm not saying I'm right or anybody's right. I just think it's something, a conversation that needs to be had.
Yeah, if HYROX decides not to take a stance that's negative against it, like it's legal, that's totally, it's their brand, it's their decision, it's their business. But what I'm saying is like, I believe in trying to, as much as you can, you support what you believe in with your dollars or with your image or your notoriety, whatever it is, basically support what you want to grow. And so if I have personal convictions against that not being something that's good to teach other people to do, then I will probably participate less in a sport that encourages that.
For sure.
Yeah.
Speaking of encouraging others and helping others, a big part of your life now is the coaching side. So tell me how that has kind of blossomed over the last couple of years. And I'm curious also how it went from like the previous career, which I think was firefighting, into being a full-time coach / athlete.
Yeah. So ultimately, I started coaching actually about 8 years ago, if endurance coaching. Before that, when I was in high school, I actually coached soccer for like younger kids, but I don't really count that. It's different. But I started coaching cyclists about 7-8 years ago. The reason I did that is because I was really passionate about endurance performance, and there were quite a few high school riders, and then also like local. There's a race from Logan to Jackson, and it's like a 200-mile bike race. And a lot of them, they saw what I was doing in racing, and they wanted some help. And so I would create training plans for them. Because again, that was what I was passionate about. That's what I loved to study. I was in college at the time. That's what I was studying. So I enjoyed it. And then a couple years ago, once I started getting into the hybrid racing scene and also the OCR space, I wanted to take time and still only coach cyclists until I understood the sport better. So I really didn't start coaching OCR and hybrid racers until 2022, about the beginning of 2022. So almost 2 years ago now. And the reason for that is like, I have a personal policy of I won't coach someone in something I don't haven't had personal experience in. And I feel like there's a certain level of experience that I like to have before I will try and help someone else. For instance, I try every workout on myself before I give it to someone else, or at least a version of it, because I might scale it down for someone else, or I might scale it up. But at least like I understand how much rest needs to happen, how it's going to make me feel, anything like that. I think it's super important to understand. So because of that conviction, I took a few years to just like learn about the sport. And then last year, I started traveling a lot for racing, because I wanted to understand more and more at how to race at a high level. But I was also working as a full-time firefighter, so I'd come back from traveling to Europe or Abu Dhabi or wherever it was, and I would work a 72 or 96-hour shift, and I'd be getting up at night, going on night calls, and then obviously day calls are more common. And I got to the point where I was getting sick like twice a month, and I'm not talking like a cold. Sometimes it was sicker than I can ever remember being. Like twice my trachea almost closed off twice when I got sick because it was so swollen. And obviously you're exposed to a lot of sicknesses, so if your immune system is compromised because you're not sleeping, which I wasn't, you get sick really easy. So after about 4 or 5 months of that, and then my crew also didn't like how much I was traveling because I was gone a lot. And I would do shift trades. So like I would trade with someone on a different crew. They'd come in to my family. They didn't like that because they're like, we want you here, not some sub. So yeah, between all that, I basically decided I wanted to be healthy again, and focus more. Because I could only take so many athletes and still be able to work full time as a firefighter. And it got to the point where it was like, well, I could do coaching full time, but I also really love fire and EMS. Like I love being a firefighter and I love racing as well. And it was just too many pots on the stove and I had to take one off. And my decision was, and I actually talked with a couple of my chiefs about this, was they encouraged me and said I could come back anytime because they're like, you have the opportunity to do this right now and to go all in on yourself before you have a family, before you have kids, before other people are relying on you, and everything could crash and burn, and you like your business could fail, you know, all this, you could lose everything, but it's just you, so you can just start over and you can come back, and that was really nice to hear from people in my life that I really respected, and so yeah, I decided I'll go back to it later, if that's something I want to do later, but I also do want to be a pilot as well, so I might. That might be the next thing after I retire from coaching. But honestly, I really love coaching. So I think it's going to be something, it's been the longest form of job that I've had ever. So, like, I was a firefighter for about 4 years, I was a bike mechanic for about five. And then the rest of the time I've been in school and growing up. So, yeah, I've been a coach for eight now. So it's been something that is consistently there, and I actually do this practice that I learned from a guy named Mike Garrick, and it's called values tracking. And you write what's most important in your life, like your top values. You write them down every couple months and check in with yourself and be like, am I pursuing what's most valuable to me? And consistently, like helping others is up there, inspiring others, coaching, my relationship with God, family. Fitness, my own personal fitness, those are always up there. And after a couple years of doing that, you realize like these things aren't going to change. Like this is who I am. I need to stay on my purpose of doing, like keeping my values intact. So I honestly think I'm going to be a coach for the rest of my life in some form or fashion.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I think it fits so well with what you're doing that it makes sense. And I'm curious how at this point, how many clients do you have, or is that what you call them? I guess clients. And then where would you
Clients or
like to
athletes.
see that number, where would you like to see that number go?
So actually I am maxed out on what I'm comfortable with right now. I think roughly it's about 25 right now. Let me check my phone battery really quick. Is that okay? I
Yeah,
think
do your thing.
it gave me like a warning.
No, you're good.
Okay.
I can
I'm
always
at
take them out if
10%.
you need to.
Okay, stand by. I gotta grab my charger.
No worries.
Or die. Okay, can you still hear me okay? Okay,
Yep.
sweet. All right, so yeah, okay, so I was talking about clients. I'll just start over so you can just cut.
You're good.
Ready?
Yeah.
Okay. So right now I'm actually pretty much maxed out on the amount of one-on-one clients that I can take. And so right now I'm between 20 and 25, and that's what I am comfortable with without going over and having like I don't want to decrease the quality of the product in order to make more money. Like that's something, money's not that important to me. Yes, I want to make a living and I want to make sure that I have enough, but I have enough, so I'm not worried about that. And I also know that if I continue to take on clients because I want to get greedy and make more money, it's more difficult for me to work on like growing in the future and also self-development, because if I don't have time to keep learning, especially in a sport like hybrid fitness, because for instance, if I was a running coach and I had been a running coach for a very long time and I was coaching runners, there's a lot of knowledge that's old and it's still applicable because people have been doing it for so long. Cycling is also similar. Like it's much easier for me to coach a cyclist who only wants to do cyclist than a hybrid athlete that wants to do OCR, strength training. They want to do HYROX, they want to do DECA, and maybe they want to do some trail running races throughout the year and some ultras like yourself. Like you're doing a lot. So that requires way more knowledge for me to continue to learn, because the whole, like it's trendy right now, the hybrid athlete thing, but the whole mix of trying to be a strength athlete and someone who's very strong, but also very capable endurance-wise, is not really studied at a very large level yet. So there have been studies on OCR athletes, but the pool is so small that it's very easy to have results skewed. Because say you study 10 athletes. Well, you learn, but it's different than if you have 10,000 athletes that you studied. Like you get much more accurate results of what most people will adapt to when the study is larger. And we just don't have studies on large enough pools of hybrid athletes. I don't think there's really hardly any studies on hybrid athletes in general, but even the ones that are on like OCR athletes or I think triathletes would be the next closest thing that has a largest pool. But yeah, like it requires a lot more work on continuing education on my end. So if I take on too many athletes, I can't continue to educate and try new things on myself to then give to my athletes and be like, hey, this works. Like I feel good about giving it to you. It's the same thing with sponsorships. Like I won't, for money, I won't promote product that I don't believe in because they pay me a lot. Because to me, honesty is more important than money. And time is also more important than money. So if I'm giving away too much time by taking on too many athletes, then yes, I'm receiving money, but it's not as high in my list of values. I'd rather have more time than money. And also I'd rather have more honesty than money. So
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I think it makes a lot of sense that you're at your max because you're one of those guys that folks see doing all these different things and seemingly being successful at all of them. So it's not a surprise to me that you're kind of booked up in terms of coaching clients because yeah, you're definitely one of those guys that first name that pops into people's heads when you think about an athlete that can kind of do a little bit of everything. So I'm not surprised.
That means a lot, but also it's like that's it does broaden my pool of athletes that I feel comfortable coaching, because I understand how to blend it. So that's why I feel comfortable coaching an athlete like yourself, because it's very difficult to be an ultra athlete and also do Hyrox and Decafit and maybe the occasional like OCR as well, and then do a 100 miler. It's a difficult blend, but it is doable. And then you also, like, you and I both want to get outside and go play in the mountains. And so it's a hard blend to get right, and everyone's slightly different, but if I've experienced it, it's easier for me to help others as well. So I also want to maintain that I continue to try and learn different sports and stuff so that I can help people. Cause not everyone wants to be, you know, like world champion at Hyrox or world champion at Spartan Race. Like if you just wanted to do one sport, then you can specialize in that sport. But if you want to do a lot of sport, because for me, it's more about the lifestyle than the actual race wins. Like I love racing and competing at a high level. And so if I can find a way to do it at multiple different sports, it's more fun for me and I enjoy life more.
I think that's kind of how I got into racing in the first place was just, I was just spending a ton of time in the backcountry and like being really remote and then figuring out that I had like this residual fitness from spending a lot of time in the mountains and hiking and running all the time, and then got introduced to racing. And I was like, oh, this is kind of, you know, what I've been training for. Like you spend a lot of time in the mountains and you build like this physical and mental resilience that transfers really well. And I think, I mean, it makes sense. You, Ryan Kent got first at Hyrox Chicago. He's running in the mountains all the time. You get second at Hyrox Chicago. You're running in the mountains all the time. It's not like you guys are running on polished concrete every day. Like mountain athletes tend to transition really well. Look at Hunter McIntyre. He's always rucking and biking in the mountains. Like that kind of
same thing.
Yeah. Ryan Adkins. I mean, he's backcountry skiing. He's mountain biking. All these guys, it's the lifestyle. Like you're saying, it's not necessarily just about like specializing for the race platform.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I try and point out to people, the more diverse you are, the easier it is to pick up something new. So if you include a lot of diversity in training, when you're faced with a new challenge, even if you've never done it before, your learning process is greater. So like it's a similar thing where I think the best way to explain it is if you do one board sport, all the other ones become a little bit easier. So if you longboard, surfing becomes easier. If you surf, skateboarding becomes easier. If you skateboard, snowboarding becomes easier to learn because you already have partial connections. And that's something people don't talk about. Like they look at what I'm doing and they're like, how does he do it all? Or how does he learn all these different things? And it's like, because my whole life I love learning. And so once you make certain connections, you don't have to make as many new connections in your brain to learn a skill when there's already a bunch of connections made, because that's how the brain works, is that literally you make new connections and that's how you don't degrade in mental strength over time, is you continue making new connections. And so the more you make, the easier it is to make new ones, in my head.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I appreciate you sharing all your wisdom and time. And I think this is going to be an episode that gives a lot of folks not only knowledge, but also just like a sense of hope and a sense that we can all do a little bit more and be a little bit better. So I appreciate you sharing your story with us and all your goodies. So appreciate you, man.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for the opportunity. It was an awesome podcast.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure we'll be talking soon after Hyrox, and we'll check in again couple months, see how your racing season goes.
Yeah, crush it in Dallas, dude. You'll have fun.
It's gonna be good. I'm excited. All right, man. See you later.
All right, see you, dude.